Land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty. Sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan. Or is it a state of mind? Never forget!
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Sweet Liberty. Thank you for joining us tonight. I know it's past our music time, past the intro music. I had to dial a few times before I was able to get through. Once again, thanks for joining us tonight. Tonight, this is Wednesday, and it is the 8th of November. Oh, my goodness, already in the year 2006. And our spiritual message this evening, this is from Course in Miracles. I pulled one and there was another one sticking up, so I pulled them both to share with you tonight. The one that I was going to do first, that I am going to do right now, this is from the text on page 92. It says that everything you teach, you are learning. Teach only love, and learn that love is yours and that you are love. And the other one that was sticking up, that I took this also, because to me that is a sign. If there's another one sticking up, I'm supposed to read it. This is from the text, page 278. Those who remember always that they know nothing and who have become willing to learn everything will learn it. Now, we have a lovely guest with us this evening, folks. A fairly new friend, but a friend that I believe that we've known each other since eternity.
Yeah.
Julie, thank you so much for being here tonight, honey.
You're welcome. Hello, everyone.
And I didn't say your last name because I didn't know.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay, so Julie, Julie and I have been having lots of conversations, folks, and we get into such awesome conversations, and Julie is so in-depth, let me say it this way, and so often that we've talked, I think, oh, gee, I wish our listeners could have been in on this conversation, so tonight you are, and we didn't plan anything particular, And we, Julie, have you ever done this before, honey?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay.
But I, can I say this? We share a depth.
You can say anything you want, sweetheart.
We share a depth, Jackie. That was a beautiful compliment. Thank you very much. No, I've never done this before, so I'm a little nervous, but
okay,
I'll
get
through it.
You know, you don't have to. It's like Brian said, all we're going to do is have a conversation on the phone.
Yeah, and we have many.
Yeah. Folks, what I wanted to do, and I asked Julie's permission, her, just to be patient with me here. Last week, I started reading to you the War Prayer by Mark Twain. And I said I would pick it up tonight, and I remember just before the broadcast, I do want to do this for you because it's up close and personal. War, 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 until the war is just a word. And I want you to really consider what you're hearing here. This is by Mark Twain. It was a time of great exulting excitement. The country was up in arms. The war was on. In every breast burned the holy fire of patriotism. The drums were beating, the bands playing, the toy pistols popping, the bunched firecrackers hissing and spluttering. Excitement, can you imagine that, folks? Because a war was on. And that's because people don't really, really, really relate, do they, to what a war is all about. On every hand and far down the receding and fading spread of roofs and balconies, a fluttering wilderness of flags flashed in the sun. Daily the young volunteers marched down the wide avenue, gay and fine in their new uniforms. The proud fathers and mothers and sisters and sweethearts cheering them with voices choked with happy emotion as they swung by. Nightly, the packed mass meetings listened, panting, to patriot oratory, which stirred the deepest deeps of their hearts, and which they interrupted at briefest intervals with cyclones of applause, the tears running down their cheeks the while. In the churches, the pastors preached devotion to flag and country, and invoked the God of battles, beseeching his aid in our good cause. Invoked the God of battles, beseeching his aid in our good cause, in outpourings of fervid eloquence which moved every listener. It was indeed a glad and gracious time. And the half dozen rash spirits that ventured to disapprove of the war and cast a doubt upon its righteousness straightway got such a stern and angry warning that for their personal safety's sake, they quickly shrank out of sight and offended no more in that way. This is written a long, long time ago, folks. Sunday morning came. Next day the battalions would leave for the front. The church was filled. The volunteers were there, their young faces alight with martial dreams, visions of the stern advance, the gathering momentum, the rushing charge, the flashing sabers, the flight of the foe, the tumult, the enveloping smoke, the fierce pursuit, the surrender, and then home from the war, bronzed heroes, welcomed, adored, submerged in golden seas of glory. That was what they visualized. With the volunteers sat their dear ones, proud, happy, and envied by the neighbors and friends who had no sons and brothers to send forth to the field of honor, there to win for the flag, or failing, die the noblest of noble deaths. The service proceeded. A war chapter from the Old Testament was read. Well, that's where all the war comes from, isn't it, folks? The first prayer was said. It was followed by an organ burst that shook the building. And with one impulse, the house rose with glowing eyes and beating hearts and poured out that tremendous invocation. God, the all-terrible, thou who ordainest, thunder thy clarion and lightning thy sword. Then came the long prayer. None could remember the like of it for passionate pleading and moving and beautiful language. The burden of its supplication was that an ever-merciful and benign Father of us all would watch over our noble young soldiers and aid, comfort, and encourage them in their patriotic work, bless them, shield them in the day of battle and the hour of peril, bear them in his mighty hand, make them strong and confident, invincible in the bloody onset, help them to crush the foe, grant to them and to their flag and country imperishable honor and glory. An aged stranger entered and moved with slow and noiseless step up the main aisle, his eyes fixed upon the minister, his long body clothed in a robe that reached to his feet, his head bare, his white hair descending in a frothy cataract to his shoulders, his seamy face unnaturally pale, even to ghastliness. With all eyes following him and wondering, he made his silent way. Without pausing, he ascended to the preacher's side, and he stood there waiting. With shut lids, the preacher, unconscious of his presence, continued with his moving prayer, and at last finished it with the words uttered in fervent appeal, Bless our arms, grant us the victory, O Lord our God, Father and protector of our land and flag. The flag. The stranger touched his arm and motioned him to step aside, which the startled minister did, and he took his place. The stranger took the minister's place. During some moments, he surveyed the spellbound audience with solemn eyes, in which burned an uncanny light. And then in a deep voice he said, I come from the throne bearing a message from Almighty God. The words smote the house with a shock. If the stranger perceived it, he gave no attention. He continued, He has heard the prayer of his servant, your shepherd, and will grant it, if such shall be your desire, after I, his messenger, shall have explained to you its import, that is to say, its full import. For it is like unto many of the prayers of men, in that it asks for more than he who utters it is aware of, except he pause and think. God's servant and yours has prayed his prayer. Has he paused and taken thought? Is it one prayer? No, it is two. One uttered, the other not. Both have reached the ear of him who heareth all supplications, the spoken and the unspoken. Ponder this, keep it in mind. Now listen, folks. If you would beseech a blessing upon yourself, beware, lest without intent you invoke a curse upon a neighbor at the same time. If you pray for the blessing of rain upon your crop, which needs it, by that act, you are possibly praying for a curse upon some neighbor's crop, which may not need rain and can be injured by it. You have heard your servant's prayer, the uttered part of it. I am commissioned of God to put into words the other part of it, that part which the pastor and also you in your hearts fervently prayed silently and ignorantly and unthinkingly. God grant that it was so. You heard these words, Grant us the victory, O Lord our God. That is sufficient. The whole of the uttered prayer is compact into those pregnant words. Elaborations were not necessary. When you have prayed for victory, you have prayed for many unmentioned results which follow victory, must follow it, cannot help but follow it. Upon the listening Spirit of God fell also the unspoken part of the prayer. He commandeth me to put it into words. Listen. O Lord our Father, our young patriots, idols of our hearts, go forth to battle. Be thou near them, with them, in spirit. We also go forth from the sweet peace of our beloved firesides to smite the foe. O Lord our God, help us to tear their soldiers to bloody shreds with our shells. Help us to cover their smiling fields with the pale forms of their patriot dead. Help us to drown the thunder of the guns with the shrieks of their wounded, writhing in pain. Help us to lay waste their humble homes with a hurricane of fire. Help us to wring the hearts of their unoffending widows and unavailing grief. Help us to turn them out roofless with little children to wander unfriended the wastes of their desolated land in rags and hunger and thirst. Sports of the sun flames of summer and the icy winds of winter. Broken in spirit, worn with travail, imploring thee for the refuge of the grave and denied it. For our sakes who adore thee, Lord, blast their hopes, blight their lives, protract their bitter pilgrimage, make heavy their steps, water their way with their tears, stain the white snow with the blood of their wounded feet. We ask it in the spirit of love, of him who is the source of love and who is the ever-faithful refuge and friend of all that are sore beset and seek his aid with humble and contrite hearts. Amen. After a pause, the aged man said, "Ye have prayed it. If ye still desire it, speak. The messenger of the Most High waits." It was believed afterward that the man was a lunatic because there was no sense in what he said. That's it. That's the end of that, Julie.
Yes.
Thank you, honey, for being patient with me sharing that.
That's okay.
Isn't that the truth?
Yes.
I mean, you know, I've thought about this so many times, and not just in war, but just as it said, if you're praying for rain, it could be that the rain you're praying for could hurt somebody else.
Yes.
Maybe that's a thing that we should all consider. Consider not to ask for outcomes. To me, it's sort of like giving God instructions.
Right.
Know what I'm saying, honey?
Yeah, there's that. What's that saying? Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Yeah. That runs that. And sometimes maybe to project isn't always good to do. You know, your thoughts.
Do you want to expand on that, honey?
Well, when you wish for something, you're projecting your own thoughts, because thoughts are energy.
Right.
And they travel. So I could give you, I'm trying to think of a good example, like projecting your wishes for someone else's life. You know, you could be disempowering them in making their own free will choice.
Oh, yes.
You see?
Oh, so, yes.
Yeah. Because I've had it done to me. That's how I know. Because when I know something's true in me, in my own life, and someone else doesn't want that, like family, you know, family will think things and project them onto you, and it hurts you because they're not respecting you and your own feelings. So it can hurt people, because thoughts do create,
yes, they do,
things for other people. Remember we were talking about how thoughts create, and how other people, the one thing that people don't consider is that there are other people out there creating things too,
yep,
for you, or trying to anyway. There's that other aspect of it.
And you know, and here's another thing I've thought about, and maybe it was something I had read, but it's become a thought now. It's in my mind. When somebody that we love is causing problems for themselves or doing something that we know is hurtful.
Right.
Well, I mean, I've thought about this sometimes with my daughters. I mean, we've all done this growing up. And then we all wind up still alive after all the mistakes we make.
Yeah.
But I think of, you know, if one of them was in a real bad spot or they're real sad, and every time I thought of them, then I felt the grieving, Julie.
Wow.
And you know what? Maybe as I said, maybe I read it, but this makes so much sense to me. When we do that, we're actually binding them into that place where they are.
Oh, I didn't give that one. That's a good one, Jack.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's like my sister, you know, and her problems. You know, it's, I want things for her, but you can't, like, you can offer suggestions, but you can't interview. It's like, if you'll become part of the problem, too. So.
Yeah. But
it's all, it all starts with the energy and thought, you know. If you can think of everything in energy, thoughts, trees, dogs, everything in energy.
You know that book I read that I shared out of One Night by Paul Von Ward, God's Genes and Consciousness?
Ah, yeah. Yes,
well, he had a part in there. And I remember Alan saying a long, long time ago that the language that we speak was given to us. And one point in time, he went through what each of the letters actually is
right.
You know, the coded, and so that every word we speak has an energy to it.
Right.
And this author went into it in a way that really brought it home. That and one of the things he did say is that we certainly cannot have peace by, you know, using words of war and fighting and battle and etc. But it's with anything. But he said that he used the ancient Sanskrit, the Indian Sanskrit language. He said that they believed that there were actually three levels of meaning to the words. One was the spoken word, what the word meant.
Mm-hmm.
By the speaker and to the listener, but beneath that, the energy that the word itself carried with it.
You mean like a vibration?
Yes.
Like, well, a good example would be kid, the word kid and children.
Thank you.
Right?
Well, yeah, talk about that.
Well, when you start using the higher vibratory word, children, when you look at a child, a different image opens up to you. I don't know another way to say it.
I'm following.
What other one? We used another one. Was it karma and universal law?
Maybe. karma to a lot of people means a punishment.
Yeah, so if you say universal law instead of karma, and you said a good one. Was it universal law and effect?
Effect, yes.
Yes. Which was an even better one than I had thought, you know. So it's when you start using the higher words, it changes how you see things.
Yes.
Right. Instead of seeing what happens as a punishment, it's something that is coming to you in effect as a result of what you did or said.
Yes, and universal law is the perfect law of perfect justice and love.
Yes.
But to me, I'm not saying this is so just because it is to me, but right now in my mind, the main important universal law is as we sow, so shall we reap.
Right.
Because there's so much always, you know, God's going to get you, you done this, and now you're being punished. Like our Creator is some gray-haired, long-bearded old man sitting up there watching every single one of us and
keeping tabs on you.
Yeah, okay, you had it, bud. And what's so beautiful, I mean, because, you know, if that were so, then the people would really believe that they were being punished. And they go, oh, well, I deserve it. God is punishing me.
Right.
Because I sinned, rather than understanding that this beautiful law of justice is in effect at creation. As we sow, so shall we reap.
Right. It's the energy that created the experience to teach you.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something like you said of a God standing there keeping tabs on you. It's something you created through an action. Like, you don't have to seek revenge on anyone because universal law and effect brings it about. I noticed when I sat down when somebody did something really bad to me that in those moments where I just got real quiet, got still, and let it go, it did not take long, and I got to see. And, you know, the thing of it was is I didn't dance in it. That's another thing, you know, I didn't dance in it. I saw it happen and thought, wow, there's something else higher working. You know.
Oh, Julie, when you say you didn't dance in it, what do you mean by that?
Me, I didn't take pleasure in seeing them reap what they
sowed. In other words,
reaping.
When you realized that as we sow, so we reap, you weren't saying, goody, goody, they'll get theirs.
Absolutely.
You
not.
Felt the compassion
yes,
for them
yes.
not understanding, knowing what they're doing.
To themselves.
Yeah.
One of the things that I have a hard time really sinking into my head is when somebody's doing something nasty to you, they are really doing it to themselves.
Yes.
And I always go back and forth with Brian saying, oh my, you know, trying to get that sink, that thought into my head and really knowing it, you know.
It's good, you know what, it's really good when we remind each other, because I know what you just said is so, and it was such a wonderful reminder to bring it forth out front. To remember
yeah.
that, to remember it, to be able to have a compassion.
Yeah.
Knowing
yeah.
that it is so, that is an immutable law, and that as we sow, so shall we reap.
Yeah.
And think about this, getting revenge on somebody, we create our own form of karma, don't we?
Wow.
Well, we do.
Yeah.
Because two wrongs don't make a right.
Right. So that there's truth in that one, too. That saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like that, what's that one we were talking about? You teach people how to treat you.
Yes.
You remember that one?
Yes.
That I have kind of jotted, I had that one jotted down. How,
And of course that was a statement by Dr. Phil, and I'm not a Dr. Phil groupie.
Neither am
I've
I.
I've only seen the man one time.
Yeah.
And that was when I walked in the living room and Jody was here and she had on Oprah Winfrey. But I heard that and I stood there listening and I thought, oh my God, he's right. He's right.
Yeah. And you know, the exception I had was that word. You and I went back and forth
right.
with that. The teach. I always, in my mind, I did not teach them that.
Right.
They were taught that, how to treat somebody. Or how to strip somebody of their dignity from someone else. I acted as a, what word did you use? You said, how about permission?
Yeah.
We give them permission
yes.
to do that in some way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But, and then I thought of it came into my head about you, a more truer statement would be, you are responsible for how you treat others. Remember?
Yeah.
I said that one too. And if you can keep that in mind when you're, you know, dealing with others, you know.
Oh, boy, Julie.
Why?
It's true. Well, yeah.
Well, you are responsible.
I always say this, though. I mean, it is so simple. You know, when they ask Jesus, what is the greatest commandment? He didn't say, oh, number three, you know. Or,
yeah.
I think number five. He said, mm-hmm. love your Creator, Father, with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself.
Right.
Do unto others. I mean, that was in another statement, but it's pretty much the same. Do unto others as you would have to do unto you. And that is so simple. It is the total blueprint for living in this world in peace, in love, in harmony.
Yeah.
If we followed, that's what my dad said. If we just followed the good old golden rule, kids. That's what
yeah. Why well, make everything so complicated?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Let it be simple.
Well, you and I were talking about fear, about the energy that is generated in this physical world.
Right.
And I told you about the movie Monsters, Inc.
Oh, yeah, I
And you saw the movie, and you were telling me about one. We're about to take our half-hour
okay.
break here, and we'll be gone about 30 minutes. So I mean 30 seconds. I mean 3 minutes. Excuse me, Julie. I'm writing while I'm talking.
So am I.
And I'm writing something different than what I'm saying. So anyway, folks, yeah, we're going to be gone here for about 3 minutes. Not 30 seconds and not 30 minutes.
Continue laughing.
And Julie will be back with us. And
thank
so,
you.
Yeah, you stay with us, folks.
Thank you. So do I.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188. If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Pass Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free? Or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
And I think we're back on the air.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, folks, Julie and I were just having a conversation. I'm going to share this with you because it's kind of in line with what we were talking about.
Important.
Wanting something for somebody in our life, as Julie was talking about. And it's really, who are we to interfere with? And that is such a big lesson for me. And I was telling Julie, see, because I have wants for my girls in their life, and Julie admitted she has wants for her sisters too, her sister. But I did learn some things, and that's, you know, I told my children this, Julie, both of my girls, the problem with being a parent is, and not that I think, you know, I mean, this is almost a dangerous thing to say, because there have been bills introduced in the states that parents could not have children unless they went to parenting classes. Serious, God's honor. But I said, you know, we learn how to be parents with our children. There's no instructions that come with having children other than loving them. And everything I have ever done was done in love, and even the terrible mistakes I made were done in love. But I always had this, because what we do is practice on our children. But I was at a seminar one time, and during the course of this thing, they were talking about being an already always listening, and they wanted to know, what do you think that means? And, you know, people were saying this. Well, and the example was given of a teacher when they're talking to one of the students, they're listening always as a teacher. And that's what they are, is an already always listening as a teacher. Maybe they carry it right through into the rest of their lives. And as I was listening to this, I thought, oh my God, I'm an already always listening as a mom. And I really felt part of my responsibility was when they asked me, Mom, what should I do? I should tell them, Julie. Honestly, that's true what I'm telling you. And I always had these wonderful suggestions for them. And then, and this is now after Jody. She's out of school already, but Nicole wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And Jody called me one day and says, she had some big thing going, Mom, what should I do? I said, Jody, I don't know, honey. She goes, oh, yes, you do.
Oh,
I said, no, I don't. She says, Mom, why are you doing this? I know you know. I said, Jody Kay, I have made so many mistakes in my own life, honey. Oh, who am I to tell you what you should do in your life?
Right.
And I said, I swear to you, I promise you, I don't know what you should do. You have to figure that out. You have to know this for you. And then, so, you know, finally she accepted it, but one day she called me and she goes, Mom, I know you don't want to, but would you splurge just once here? And tell me at least what you think. I said, no. And Nicole told Jody, she says, you know, I just wish she could have waited till I was out of school before she did that thing. But that, don't you think there is something really to think about there?
Sure. Sure there is.
Speaking to our children as we have all the answers.
Right. And look what they taught, what they teach you.
Ha ha.
See, it's the acknowledgement in everyone that comes into your life as something, some sort of a teacher. It's going to teach you something either about you or about life. Maybe something, you know, as simple as, even like the, take the example of something cruel that they do to you, and you love them anyway, you know. They're teaching you how loving you are. You know? That's just an example.
Yes.
None.
Yes. Well, the movie...
Monsters,
Inc. Yeah, Monsters, Inc. I told you I had read about this when I was on the way to St. Louis that time when Nicole was going to have her surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the back of a book. Chuck brought it home, and I said, hey, I'm not going to read the book. Don't buy me. I'm not a David Icke follower, but there are truths in his book. I mean, like in a lot of books we read, but the last chapter of this book was what was so, well, I thought it was well written. It's his book, Alice in Wonderland and the World Trade Center. I haven't read the book at all, but I did read the last chapter. And in this one, he's talking about that he mentioned somebody, physicist Giuliani Comforto,
mm-hmm.
tells me that interspace planes do not have a natural energy source like a dimension.
Right.
Any entities operating there would need to create an energy source for themselves, and they have fear. When we feel fear, it generates a vibration and energy field. Every time we think and feel, no matter what our state of being may be, we're sending out broadcast waves that vibrate to the frequency of the particular thought or emotion.
Mm-hmm.
We feel these frequencies coming from people in what we call, quote, vibes. The low vibration of fear and its associated emotions like anger, aggression, stress, guilt, produce frequencies that pour into the interspace planes. And this has become an energy source for these other entities. And he says the more that humanity feels fear in all its forms, the more energy, more power they have to sustain them and use back against us. Geez, I said this about 12 years ago on the air,
mm-hmm.
and I knew it, but I didn't know how much I knew it, because I said I just know that all of the negative energy is what they're feeding on. It's like we're feeding the beast.
Right. And they're powerless without us.
Yes. And yes, they're powerless
they're
without us.
They're milking us.
And he mentioned the movie, the recent major children's movie called Monsters, Inc.
Yes.
Had the same theme. The monster world did not have an energy source. So they walk through doors, portals, interdimensional gateways into children's bedrooms in the human world. There they would frighten children, and then when the kids screamed with fear, the monsters would capture that energy, take it back through the door to power their world. And I thought, oh man, and this is a children's movie.
Right.
And I thought, boy, I want to watch that movie. As soon as I got there, one of the first things the children asked me, Mo, have you seen Monsters, Inc.?
See, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I said, no, but I sure want to.
Yeah.
But you, so you got the movie and you watched
it.
Yeah,
and I noticed in the beginning they had, when they put the logo up, they had the milking, the cow mooing sounds. Did you pick that up?
I know.
Yeah, that's what it's like. They're in our faces, you know, like milking you. I mean, they're mocking us, you know. They're
the herd.
Yeah,
milking the herd.
Yeah,
for
that's
the
right
energy.
In the beginning of it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and it is so true. I mean, Jackie, it was so precious. The little girl. I mean, I think that's like the lure for the. For the movie, the little girl's vocal resonance.
Uh-huh.
And it was so precious, but it made me mad because they used it to pull people in, you know.
What do you think, Julie? I see, I can't always figure out. A lot of times it is mocking the victim, just mocking the victims.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that, at the end of that movie, they were using the children's fears to energize their own place where they lived, their dimension,
mm-hmm.
or inner dimension. And then when he was taking the little girl that, you know, clung to his back when
right.
he came through, and she wasn't afraid of him
right.
when he was doing all that stuff, and she sat there and went, boop.
Yeah.
and then giggle. Remember when he was taking her back through the portal into her own, back to her own room? And she giggled, and he looked over at the energy barometer, and just one little giggle
right.
sent that thing all the way to the top. And before, they had children screaming and crying in order to even get up close to the top.
Right.
And I thought, it was like a beautiful message,
right?
In a sense. So,
yeah.
So see, that confuses me sometimes.
Right.
What was their message in the whole thing? Just saying, look, we're using you?
I would guess. I mean, you know, we've talked about other things, like the Nephilim, you know, and how these, I call them monsters anyway, and how they've been milking us of our energy, you know. Like, they do it various ways, like making movie stars gods, you know. And we worship them. Everything we do generates some kind of energy. So they use this to basically tell you what they're doing.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
Yeah, that, it's like in your face. But I had a question though. I wondered why it was that same monster human child bonding, like the bonding. Like they did in Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
And I just saw a commercial where a Sasquatch was watching or was on the computer looking for information on how to get a girl's attention. And so he shaves his face and then he goes to this bar and he gives this girl, this, you know, blonde-haired girl, a bush of flowers or something. So I was kind of wondering why they're projecting that same image to us. I didn't know if you had any thoughts on that.
I haven't. No, I haven't.
Yeah. I don't know if... Brian said something, but I don't know if it has any merit.
Say it.
He said something about bestiality.
Well, you know what? That was in my mind.
Oh, wow.
It was in my mind because I was thinking when you mentioned Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
And, honey, there's... Julie, there is a... an article in our website at sweetliberty.org in the children's section.
Okay.
And it says something about sex with animals is okay now.
Okay.
This Dr. Stupid Springer, and he said it's okay as long as you don't hurt the animal. Like, you wouldn't want to have sex with a chicken because you could hurt the chicken. No, this is true, honey.
I'll have to. I'm gonna
and I wonder, that was in my mind when you were, that was the only thing that came in my mind, and it was because
that's amazing.
Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
And the little girl, and then, of course, the monster loved her and protected her from that reptilian thing. I wondered if there was a message there, too.
Probably.
I'm curious.
I believe it. Jackie, I mean, they put so many things in there that we probably missed them, because you get into some kind of emotional state while you're watching it that you don't always see them all, but you feel them, the subliminals, you feel them, like when you're watching a movie, just monitor your emotions while you're watching the movie, and then you can pretty much expect if you're feeling something, it's being generated by a subliminal, either sound frequency or whatever, to get the emotion. So
maybe.
Yeah,
sometimes
maybe.
Sometimes I wonder if there are cell memories too. When in a movie creates a particular emotion within us.
Sure.
Well, because I can remember when I was little, we lived in this housing project, and they used to have movies on in the summer against the wall at the community center outside. And there was a movie about slavery. And I'm sitting there watching it. I must have been about 10.
Mm-hmm.
And they had these African slaves in chains and ankle, you know, their leg chains.
Yeah.
And they were all walking with these big, heavy, clunky chains real slow and singing this mournful song. And Julie, I started crying so hard. I mean, it came out of the very depths of me that she was there with her boyfriend. They mm-hmm. wound up taking me home. And it just erupted just like a burp. And then another time, and I was still fairly young, I was not teen yet, but we would go to Grand Margaret's a lot of times for Sunday dinner, and sometimes they'd take us up the street to the movie, mm-hmm. let us have a movie, and it was a movie about the Knights Templars, the Crusades,
mm-hmm.
and it was a really terrible movie for a child to watch anyway, but I mean Mom and Dad, you know, they didn't think about that, but there was just this one scene, and the guy was in a window, and he had a bow and arrow, and he was pulling it back, and somebody threw a javelin, and it killed him, and the same thing happened to me. I could not stop crying, and Sharon went up and called Mom and said, "You have to come get Jackie. She won't quit crying."
Wow.
And I have no idea what erupted those cries.
Yeah, that's amazing. I don't even know what to say about that.
Unless it's cell memory.
Yeah. You remember I was telling you about that one movie, Dodgeball? I don't usually watch these comedies. You know, the I call them junk comedies. But my sister gave me a stack of movies, so I watched it and suffered through it because it wasn't even funny. But at the very end of it, the character says this, "That's the problem with the America cinema. Can't handle any complexity in it. Don't make me think. I just want to be entertained." That's exactly what he said.
That right at the movie?
Right at the end of the movie. Yes, I was shocked because they basically told us what they...
Yeah.
Like laughing in your face.
Yes.
You know, I don't know why they... I said to Brian, why do they waste time making these junk movies? I know why, to keep everybody entertained.
And then to mock them.
Right. And he even said it, can't handle any complexity in it. Don't make me think. Because maybe Alan's right that people don't want to think for themselves.
Yeah. I'm going to order that movie that you mentioned, The Fallen.
Oh, okay.
Tell about that movie, Julie.
It basically depicts what is really happening, how entities hop from body to body. If you remember, Alan said if they can't get into you, they can get to you. I don't know his exact words. Through other people. I've had that happen to me plenty of times. And that's basically what the movie is about. So it's a murder mystery.
But did it actually show an entity?
No, they, after the murderer is killed, he leaves the body and goes into somebody else. And so he repeats the same murder pattern with other bodies. And that's what Denzel Washington is trying to figure out in the movie. You know, and they just show how they hop from body to body. And in the end...
But we have to be a receptor.
Yeah.
We have to be receptive, I believe.
Yeah, I don't understand why they can hop from people to people and then not get in some people. I don't know why that is. Maybe...
Because of the energy, once again.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe call it the vibration.
Maybe.
Because they do not resonate. They have to be... You have to be at a level...
Oh, okay.
A vibration that allows them to do that, Julie.
So maybe some are vibrating at a higher frequency, so they can't get
yes,
in you.
Yes,
they
can't get in. You know how you know that? You remember? You know that old saying, "Curses come home to roost."
Yes.
Well, when I was in the School of Metaphysics, we talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
They said if somebody gets angry with you, and you don't get angry back,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times, rather than their anger dissipating, it becomes worse and worse because the anger cannot penetrate your field, so to speak. I'm using my own words here,
mm-hmm.
and it just bounces right back.
Very interesting, because I heard that once. I'm trying to think of it. Don't resent someone because what's in them will get inside of you. So maybe that's the same thing. You open up.
In other words, you lower your energy field.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's better.
You be compatible with theirs.
Yes. And so what's in them gets in you.
Julie.
Isn't that something to think about? So you're always monitoring your emotions and energy. I think that's the step. First step is thinking of it. Everything in forms of energy.
I know, but we better keep that in mind.
Uh-huh.
What I'm saying is we better keep that in mind when we feel ourselves getting angry back at somebody, really angry back at them.
Right.
In their anger. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I see it clearly.
Okay, now there. We talked about anger. Okay, and see, this is why I struggle with that. I mean, we all have anger
mm-hmm.
at times, but we can control our emotions,
mm-hmm.
Not just monitor them. Well, we wouldn't if we weren't monitoring them, we wouldn't say, wait a minute here, slow back, Jack, you know.
Right.
But
yeah.
It is a negative emotion. And now, there's one thing that we can take anger and we can stifle it, to where we're seething with anger and don't even know it. And that's, you know, one of the main and most important things that Jesus, at least was attributed to Jesus, that he said, know thyself. Because we can go around smiling and acting like everything's just fine, hunky-dory, when inside we could be a seething rage.
Right, you have to clean your own inner house.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
okay.
You remember when we were talking about anger and that anger can be like righteous anger, if you would. We talked about, you know, when Jesus kicked the heck out of the money changers, and look at the way he spewed out at the Pharisees,
right?
The scribes and the Pharisees. That was anger. Sounded like anger. I mean, at least when you read it.
Right. And I remember saying that you have to get angry at injustice or channel your anger towards injustice. Remember I was saying that, and you said, well, I'm thinking of it in forms of energy.
Yes.
Maybe it's righteous anger instead of just anger itself. you know. Maybe there is a righteousness to it. I don't know,
but think about it, what we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
When we do respond with anger, do we lower the vibration? Do we lower our own, dim our light, let's say? I think of it as light, Julie. You know what I'm saying, honey?
Maybe we're using the wrong word when we're standing up for injustice.
Maybe. Remember when we were talking about that?
Mm-hmm.
And I said maybe it's, rather than being angry at injustice, is standing up for right.
Oh, resisting.
Resisting.
He said resisting,
yes.
Evil.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Not battling it, not fighting it, not
resisting.
Going to war with it. I think those are words they gave us to use, because those words have that negative, those words have that negative energy.
Yeah, because I said sometimes you have to fight, and you said, no, you were talking about the word fight, that they gave us that word. Remember that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, but you know what? It still leaves a lot of questions in my mind.
Yes, and that's what's good, because then you start thinking further.
Things for us to ponder, Julie.
Yes.
And maybe for our listeners to ponder.
Right, and maybe they can email us with
yeah.
their thoughts.
And, oh, and Julie?
Yeah.
Do you want to give your email address if somebody would like to contact you, honey?
Sure.
Okay.
It's Jade's Creed, J A D as in dog, E S C R E E D at hotmail.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your last name is Glavich.
Yeah.
I said earlier I didn't want to say your last name. I didn't know, because I know. And you are. You're in the final stages of a final editing of a book that you're writing.
Yes. it's a metaphor. It's like a chapters of metaphors. It's kind of, I don't know how to explain it.
How long have you been at it, honey?
I've been doing it since I started my own journey. I would say for 4 years now, 4 or 5 years.
And when you say you started your own journey, what does that mean?
Well, I lost everything. I lost my job, and then I think that's what happens to most people when they start really waking up.
Okay.
And that's what happened.
You get so low that it doesn't feel there's anywhere to go, so you say, oh my God, please help me.
Yeah. That's what I did.
Uh-huh. And then we begin to learn to let go and let God.
Yeah. And then looking at ourselves and seeing the seeing the bad things in yourself. And
I mean, waking up to what's happening in the world. How long have you known about this, honey?
Oh, I think I've always known as a small, you know, as a small child. But remember, we were talking about how we know, but it's not in our awareness yet. You know, like how
yeah.
I threw through the history book.
Like when I said we were born into a lie.
Right.
Jeez, Mike, that was before I ever knew Alan Watt. I said that. Oh my God, what a journey he took us on.
Yes, he did.
And, you know, back into the lie, centuries back into the lie. Julie, we're out of time tonight.
Oh, okay. That's
and Lenny, thank you so much for being here with me this evening.
Thank you, Jackie.
And thank you for being my friend.
Oh, thank you,
too. I love you.
I love you, too. Good night, everyone.
Good night, folks. Thanks for being with us, and we'll be back Wednesday night. Have a lovely week, folks.
Bye.
Good night, Julie.
Good night.
You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech because the Constitution gives it to us. The constitutional amendment was written to keep the government from taking our freedom away. The Creator gave us our rights.